The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Happy holidays from all your friends at Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
This is Heather Dubrow from Heather Dubrow's World.
Hey, it's Steve Austin from the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, this is Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana from Riggle's Picks.
This is Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine.
Hey, this is Kelty from The Lady Gang. Happy holidays from Podcast One.
The PFF Podcast is brought to you by SimpliSafe. We all put off things we know we need to do. I mean, we know we need to organize the garage or weed through our closets. I need to still rake up some leaves. But something's always getting in the way. Funny how home security can be like that. You know it's a good idea, but there's always something holding you back. Maybe it's the idea of paying a middleman or scheduling a 6-hour installation window. Like you have time for that. Well, fellow procrastinators of home protection, SimpliSafe Home Security has gotten rid of all of the reasons not to get home security. Because they believe nothing should come between you and protecting your home. We're talking no contracts, no markups, no complicated installation. It's professional-grade home security that's engineered to do one thing quickly and brilliantly, protect you and yours. So yes, you can add this to your epic to-do list. Or hey, you can get started right now. Just go to simplysafe.com/PFF. There's no better time like the present. That's simplysafe.com/PFF. Welcome into the PFF NFL Podcast. We are live here on YouTube. Steve Pelizzolo with Sam Monson, of course. Going the traditional podcast route as well, Sam, if you guys are listening. Merry Christmas to all. I'm more festive than you right now.
I bought the Christmas spice coffee in this morning.
Yeah, so
I see you bringing in Christmas spice, anything.
You saved me this morning,
right.
And I really appreciate you. I was literally just about to pour Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes.
Who could be a potential sponsor? So I'm not going to trash Dunkin' Donuts. I'm from Boston. I'm supposed to like it.
Supposed to, yeah.
However, you saved me. With the local coffee emporium, if you guys want to sponsor too, from Cincinnati, we love your coffee. And Sam comes and saves the day, and he says, I've got Christmas spice. Hold off on the dunks.
Yeah, stop what you're doing.
Also, if you guys are on YouTube, you can see my big time throws mug. Yeah. Merry Christmas to me. Mm. Merry Christmas to me. My PFF Secret Santa hooked me up with a big time throws mug.
They did.
This is special. I'm going to take a sip of the Christmas
spice. You do that. Yeah.
Mm.
So how many people
way to hold it down for
how many people do you think in their traditional podcast medium of choice, how many people do you think are still rocking like a generation one iPad or iPhone like you have?
Yeah, so I'm flying home today and I said, look, I've got my iPhone from 2012. It was my second iPhone too. Like there was a worse one before
that. You're saying that thing's like a generation four?
I don't remember. It's a two or a three, whatever. But I got my first iPhone, I think, in 2009. And that has messages from 2012. I remember getting one in between there, I think. But I use it as an iPod now because it's got all my music on it. But it is it's a lot smaller than
I could not believe the size of that thing. Like if anybody has an old first, second, third, apparently, generation iPhone, the size of them is insane. They're like toys.
Yeah.
Like that thing almost legitimately fits landscape within your new phone. That's how small that thing is.
It's outdated, Sam.
A little bit, yeah.
It's outdated. All right, we got a lot of Week 16 action to get to. We're going to review it all. We hope you guys are enjoying the holiday week and listening to us. If you're traveling, commuting, whatever it might be. If you're live on YouTube, like I said, bacon.
Live on YouTube.
Bacon. What's that?
You said if you're live
on YouTube, you might be baking cookies.
Oh.
drinking your coffee. Hopefully you've got some Christmas spice. If my kids are watching while you guys are baking cookies, hi, let's do this. Week 16 review. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the Saturday Ravens-Chargers game?
Sure.
Okay. Let's discuss the AFC playoff picture in general, starting with the Ravens' 22-10 victory over the Chargers. I think when we talked about the Ravens and what they've done with their offense, building it around Lamar Jackson, while that might be the story as far as, you know, schematics and, you know, they're doing something different, they're disrupting the NFL, as our friend Peter Schrager said, disruption in the NFL. I mean, the real story here is what their defense was able to do, right? 10 points against the Chargers?
Yeah. So the Ravens, I think, are pretty objectively not the best team in the AFC. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's fair to say.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but they might be the worst matchup for almost every team in the AFC playoff picture. It's just the way they run, with the good defense, with this run first and almost exclusive offense, with the fact that it's not just run, it's run with multiple different options at the same time, quarterback, running back, etc., and just enough of a passing threat to cause you problems when you forget about it. Like, they're obviously a disaster of a matchup for the Chargers. They just showed that.
Right.
But I think the same thing holds true with the Chiefs. You know, with any of these high-powered offenses that aren't really used to coming up against defense and aren't used to defending what we've already talked about with Lamar Jackson and that offense, they're a really bad matchup for a lot of these teams. So, ironically, for a team like the Chargers, who, I mean, this may end up being a playoff preview. This may be repeated.
As of right now, yeah. So, if the Ravens win, they win the division. They would get the 4 seed, most likely. And then they would host the Chargers, the 5 seed.
But ironically, the Chargers might actually be far better placed facing a team like the Chiefs or, you know, any of these high-powered offense-type teams than they are going up against this Ravens team again, because that was just an ugly matchup for them. It's just very badly suited for what they do well. And in the end, they weren't able to kind of execute this comeback. It looked a little bit worse on the scoreline than it actually was because, you know, they had a shot late on before, was it Antonio Gates fumbled the ball away?
Key fumble.
In what was really a real bang-bang play, right? It required replay and the splitting of frames to tell that ball got punched out before his knee hit the ground.
If you look at what Phillip Rivers did, he was 2 for 9 on passes thrown beyond 10 yards.
Yeah.
0 for 4 beyond 20 yards, including 2 interceptions. The last one at the end, you know, he had to take a chance, whatever, but he still overthrew. I mean, the Ravens made everything difficult. Nothing sums up. Look at your shallow. This is your shallow cross.
Yeah.
Breakdown here.
Yeah.
So in between 0 and 9 yards, that shorter area in the middle of the field, he was 14 for 15 for 116.
Right.
Death by a million shallow crosses. Yes. But you need to mix in something else.
But the thing is, that isn't even dramatically different from Lamar Jackson in this game. Because Lamar was 3 for 10 on passes that traveled above 10 yards. The only difference is he had that one dagger
dropped a dime in there
over the middle to
Mark Andrews
who runs 68 yards and scores a touchdown.
Yep.
And that's kind of the game. But outside of that, Lamar Jackson wasn't exactly getting anything done himself.
I had a very profound tweet.
Oh, yeah?
It did pretty well on Twitter. And it's nothing new for us. I mean, if you guys have been listening to the podcast, you know we've been saying this forever. If you're of the mind that you could, Lamar Jackson makes NFL throws and can drop one in the bucket like he did, you're right. If you're also of the mind that he's far below NFL accuracy standards on a throw-for-throw basis, you're also right. So he is the perfect Twitter quarterback, where whatever take you have is going to be right. He's dynamic as a runner, and if you're backing that up, you'll find a play. If you're going to call him inaccurate, you'll find a play. Couldn't even get the ball back to the refs.
Twice.
Accurately. Twice, as you pointed out to me. While we're eating wings. That was great. Mm. And then he also drops a diamond. Watch. He goes through progressions and he makes NFL throws. They're all true.
Yeah.
The consistency part is always the issue. And we've said many, many times, though, that offense and the running attack will give him more open throws, which will mitigate some of the inaccuracy.
Right. The Lamar Jackson conversation is way more nuanced than Twitter can handle.
Oh, absolutely.
During the course of the game, everybody wants to be like, see, he can't complete a pass. He's completely inaccurate. He'll never work, right? And then like a minute later, he completes a dime to Mark Andrews for a touchdown that essentially is the difference in the game. Or it's, see, NFL throws. He's a top-level quarterback. He can do it all. He's winning. Like, yeah, but obviously the truth is it's this mixture of things, right? He's not just a typical athletic running quarterback that has problems as a passer and can therefore never be successful long term, right? We've seen a bunch of those guys come and go, and they always go for the same reason, which is you're not a good enough quarterback right. to succeed long term once we figure out how to bottle up your athleticism. He is different because he does a lot of quarterbacking things very well.
He does.
He does read the field well. He does work through his progression well. He can find the correct target with his eyes and his mind, right? The problem is he often misses that target, or at least hits him in such a way that it's very problematic. So you see a lot of these shallow crosses you were talking about, right? Phillip Rivers puts those exactly where they should be pretty much every single play. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, et cetera, et cetera. Those quarterbacks on those easy routine
like long
passes,
handoffs, right?
Right. They hit those guys in stride, running at full speed across the field, and they don't have to break stride. They keep going, and they turn essentially a 3-yard vertical gain into, you know, 8 yards because they haven't stopped the guy. Lamar hits that guy, and it's bad enough accuracy-wise that he's had to adjust to stop it, and that's meant that the guy chasing him across the field can close the yard of separation he had and make the tackle for the 3 yards instead of the 8 yards.
Right.
So this whole thing that we've proven over time with our accuracy data, which is obvious, it's obvious and it's logical that accuracy, actual ball location, creates yards after the catch. That's where Lamar Jackson falls down.
On certain
because
throws,
of the lack
right?
Of
on
accuracy.
Crossing routes, right. On horizontal
so his
throws,
overall
yep.
lack of accuracy is a problem long term because it prevents all of this yards after the catch.
Right.
But where he makes up for it is those Mark Andrews plays, right? Which is he does have
yep.
those special, high-end, top-level accuracy plays in his arsenal, and he does all those quarterbacking things well.
Right.
So that differentiates him from all these quarterbacks like Vince Young or whatever, a guy who was just one read and run because he was that athletic. It's a different type of player. And I think the jury is legitimately still out as to what he can become, right? Is that going to be a big enough problem to prevent him being a top-level quarterback long-term once teams do discover how to defend him? Or is it good enough? Is the combination of raw athleticism plus being a good quarterback good enough to overcome being a basically inaccurate thrower of the football?
And a lot of people came to his defense when I made that statement. Well, some people said, well, you're an idiot because the accuracy thing...
That's what I go for.
Yeah, it's true. The accuracy thing is most important. And other people are like, well, he's young. I mean, yeah, he's young. I don't know how much that accuracy is going to improve. He's not a natural thrower of the football.
You're a big young guy, though. You're a big age guy. That doesn't convince you?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you're going to... There's certain things that you can improve and things that you can't, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot... You can improve throwing the ball, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers...
You can a little bit.
...throws totally different now than he did as a prospect. Tom Brady throws totally different now to how he did as a prospect. Those guys, you know, have throwing coaches
have.
Or whatever. There is something to this idea that, I mean, we were saying, we watched this game together, right? And I was saying, it legitimately looks like he doesn't know how to throw a ball mechanically.
Yeah.
Like, we sit around the office, right? And there's a ball kicking around. And every now and again, an impromptu game of catch breaks out between everybody just sitting around, you know, in the office.
Of course.
And Zach Robinson is a former NFL quarterback. And even from, like, 8 yards away lobbing the ball, right, he just throws it differently to everybody else in the
yeah.
office because he understands the mechanics of how it works. Lamar doesn't have that.
Lamar looks like the rest of us.
Right. It gets there, and it's often more or less the right thing, right? It looks vaguely the way it should, but it's just mechanically slightly yeah. different. It's not this perfect spiral coming out of his hand every time, no matter how it's supposed to work.
That's the thing. You hear about guys throwing a tight spiral.
Right.
He looks like he throws like the loosest spiral.
Now
that
maybe
you have.
Maybe if it sounds stupid, right? But legitimately, maybe nobody has ever taught him the mechanics of how to throw a ball. And if that is true, I mean, that's fixable.
Maybe
right?
There is
if you actually
to improve.
Spend an offseason, somebody like Zach Robinson working with Lamar Jackson mm. and breaking down his mechanics and
Lamar,
actually
call
building
Zach.
It back up.
He'll help you out.
Like, you know, this idea of he's just a bad thrower of the ball, maybe that isn't set in stone. Like, he's young, Steve. maybe that could be developed over
time.
He is
a young quarterback. And either way, I do think our pre-draft analysis, pretty right on so far with Lamar. Nothing summed up our entire summation than the one play they ran play action. He rolls out. He has a wide open receiver, and he puts it like kneecaps high
yeah.
to complete it. But again, it was one of those. It was like a 10-yard gain that should have been
right.
20 or 30. So you can get by with that. That's still a valuable play for the offense. It just could be a little bit better. I'm going to sum this game up, though, by looking at the Chargers' pass blocking grades.
Okay.
Russell Okung, 53.
Yeah.
Left tackle. Left guard, Dan Feeney, 45. 0 to 100 scale here. Mm-hmm. 60, 65. 65 is about average. Mike Pouncey, 57. That led the Chargers' offensive line.
Pro bowler, Mike Pouncey.
Michael Schofield, 40.6. And then Sam Tevi at right tackle, 21.5.
Yeah.
So the offensive line, Phillip Rivers was pressured on about half of his snaps. Big snacks.
Yeah.
And then you've got like Terrell Suggs with 8 pressures. You've got Za'Darius Smith, who just really took advantage of their guards. He had 7 pressures, including 2 sacks. It was just a really good, well-rounded effort by the Baltimore defense.
Total pressures surrendered by that group. 4 for Okung, 2 for Dan Feeney, 4 for Mike Pouncey. If a center is giving up 4 pressures, that's ridiculous. That should not happen.
High.
Right guard, Schofield, 4 pressures, including a sack. Sam Tevi, 9 total pressures, including a sack.
It was rough.
I mean, I said...
Plus a bunch of holding penalties.
Yeah,
they just kept getting into...
penalties in there as well. I mean, I said during the game that the Chargers are kind of like last year's Vikings, where the offensive line at its best was just about good enough to keep their head above water.
Yeah.
But the second they have to go into the bench, they're screwed, and the Chargers have had to go into the bench. Like, Michael Schofield is still playing football. That shouldn't happen. Sam Tevi is playing. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah, not good.
Like, that offensive line is now bad enough, particularly against a team like the Ravens, who can actually bring some heat, that it's bad enough that Rivers can't get it done at that level.
Yeah, it's not great right now. So, the Chargers, now with the Chiefs losing, the Chargers lose a golden opportunity to potentially get the number one seed. They're still technically in the hunt. If they win and the Chiefs lose to the Raiders,
yeah,
the Chargers can get the number one seed. But if the playoffs started today, Sam, mm-hmm. which they don't.
No, they don't.
We'd see a rematch Ravens-Chargers, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Chargers, I would think, would desperately want to avoid that. That is
in
not,
Baltimore,
is
too.
Not a good
it would have to
for them.
Either way, the Chargers, unless the Chargers get the number one seed, they're going on the road.
Right.
Wild card weekend. So that was an impressive effort by the Ravens in that one. We'll talk about the Titans and Colts a little bit later because they're going to be the Sunday night game. I want to go to the Texans. Let's go to the rest of the AFC real quick. The Texans-Eagles game, just a fantastic game. Coming into the game, we're thinking, okay, is it another Nick Foles spectacular outing, or is he due for the other end of the spectrum? As great as Nick Foles was in the playoffs last year, in the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl, do we remember how bad he was in a couple of his regular season starts against the Cowboys week 17?
We don't.
Against the Raiders. He was horrendous down the stretch, and even his divisional game against the Falcons last year was a lot of luck.
Yeah.
And then he had, you were calling it the most improbable two-game stretch maybe in NFL history.
Yeah. Don't forget week one this year, he also sucked against the Falcons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was bad.
Right. We were talking about this. I don't know if it's even possible anymore in today's NFL for things to be appropriately categorized in sort of NFL folklore. You know, the way, like the drive, right? We still talk about the drive. When was that, 1987 or something?
86 season, 86
right.
or 87, yeah.
So that is, I mean, realistically, look, as great as the drive was, right? That has happened again dozens of times since that. You know, one game-ending drive, 99, whatever. That's happened a lot of times, right? A long game-ending drive to win the game. It was impressive, but it probably shouldn't be talked about 30 years later.
Yeah.
When you consider some of the other things that have happened. Like the you know, the Minneapolis Miracle. That's probably not going to last as long as the drive, and that's one of the most ridiculous plays that's ever happened. But I don't, this thing, this world of like quick instant gratification, then on to the next thing, and everything's over Twitter, it explodes, and it's done. I wonder if we're even capable of like effectively placing this kind of stuff in the annals of NFL history.
Well said.
Thank you. So Nick Foles played the Minnesota Vikings on the road. The Minnesota Vikings at this point had the number one defense in all of football. He dominated them, ridiculously so, and then did the same thing in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots when he needed to play big. Like, he played as well as any quarterback has ever played in the postseason over a two-game stretch against the number one defense in the NFL and in the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Can I read his game grades from last year?
Do.
So last year at this time, Week 16, he gets his second start. His first start is against the Giants. He was 71.7, mm-hmm. better statistically than the numbers. Week 16 last year against Oakland, 31.9. That's horrendous. Yeah. Week 17, he only played 19 snaps. We had a terrible interception there, 34 grade. Wildcat, the divisional round against the Falcons, he was a 50. Again, that was the pass where he fires it right to the free safety and it bounces back to the Eagles for a completion. Then he gets to the NFC Championship, 93.8, mm-hmm. which is exceptional, of course, and then the Super Bowl, 92.3. It was the Foles coaster is unbelievable. And again, first week this year against the Falcons, he's in the 50s. And then, you know, when you see him against the Rams with a 75.6, and yesterday we don't have his final grade in there, but it was well above average. And it's just the plays that he can make in crunch time and down the field to the point where Eagles fans are actually debating him or Wentz, which I think is crazy.
Yeah.
But Wentz, remember Wentz was an MVP candidate last year?
Yeah.
Those two game grades that Foles had in the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl dwarfed anything Wentz put up there from a game grade standpoint last year or this year.
Yes.
So his individual game grades are at the highest end of the high.
Right. Like, I just think that if he'd done that back in the 80s, this would be something that lived in NFL history forever.
Yeah.
We'd be talking about Nick Foles, this insane hero, folklore hero.
Well, I was joking. What if
the end of time?
Everybody likes to use the Eli two Super Bowls. That's why he's getting in. That and the fact that he just doesn't miss games, so he accumulates stats, right? What if Foles went on another Super Bowl run this year? Is he just instantly in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I mean, he has as good a case as Eli if he does that
His stretch was better than Eli's.
Yes, but shorter.
Yeah, and he only did it once.
Yeah. So if he does it again, given the hole the Eagles were in when he came in, like and is the same percentage of responsible for it. You know what I mean? Like, they don't win last year without him playing that well. Like, he was absurd.
Oh, of course.
He would have to play absurd and be
the
reason.
I mean, they gave up 33 points in the Super Bowl.
Right. He would have to play that well and be the reason that they won again for the second stretch. Foles, if he did it again, that would be completely ridiculous.
Foles also, interestingly enough, has one of the greatest statistical seasons of all time in 2013. That was Chip Kelly's first year with the Eagles. Now, his PFF grade was 78, showing 83 passing grade, showing that he wasn't as good as the numbers would show. We've been saying this for a while, but he had 28 touchdowns, 27-2. Sorry, I'm looking at the playoff totals too. 27-2 during the regular season, passer rating up near 115+. I mean, it was an incredible season. It was a very good statistical season. Foles is just fascinating. And the fact that he's even put himself in the conversation where some Eagles fans, I don't know, I haven't heard from all of them, are actually debating Foles versus Wentz. And then you have a game like yesterday. It's another shootout. He's got to make plays when it counts. And he will, just like we said last week, he will stand in the face of pressure. He took a massive hit, gets hurt at the end of the game. Nate Sudfeld had to come in. But he is tough in the pocket, tough under pressure. And maybe it is that old Josh McCown, Sam Bradford obliviousness to pressure. When you just stand in there and make plays, some years those passes look horrible because you're like, what are you doing, you idiot? And then other times, you make great plays. And that's like the fluctuation of what happens under pressure.
I mean, we've said before that I think he might be the single most high-variance quarterback in all of the NFL. Like, going into a given week, you could get the best quarterback in the NFL or you could get a disaster. And I don't know if there's a good way of predicting which one's going to come.
A good one for you real quick.
Having said that, we are starting to lean towards the good side, right?
Yeah.
He is ticking away these games where in real crunch time where you need him to actually play well, he's playing well. And we haven't had the implosion for a while.
Here's where the implosion might come, because this is unsustainable. This year, under pressure, he has a higher passer rating than he does with no pressure.
Yes.
83.8 versus 81.1. And the PFF grades are similar. No pressure, he's a 71. With pressure, he's a 69. It's very, very close. So the pressure stuff's usually difficult to sustain.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what's just really interesting about this run. So the implications of this game, and this is where you have to love the NFL. It's a playoff game, essentially. The Texans are fighting for their life to get not only into the playoffs, but to get a first-round bye, which they were in line for yesterday until the loss. The Eagles have to win out to have a shot at the playoffs, and they played the Rams, and the Texans, I saw somebody say this is the first time they've ever beaten a team that has at least 10 wins in back-to-back weeks, which isn't that crazy because how often do you face two 10-win teams late in the season?
Back-to-back weeks, yeah.
But it was very, very, you know, it's a clutch couple weeks for
it
the
is,
Eagles.
Yeah.
And that was a really fun game to watch. Watson was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, that I mean, that offense continues to confound, right? It remains that Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins and basically nothing else, and it remains enough. Like, it's ridiculous that that functions. One quarterback, two wide receiver hookup in the face of everything else being bad should not produce a successful offense.
Yeah.
It should basically be impossible, and yet those two continue to make it happen. Right down to that play at the very end of the game, the go-ahead score. Deshaun Watson evades, I think, at least four clear missed tackles in the backfield by Eagles defenders, including, I think, by Brandon Graham, who didn't get a sack in that game.
He had like nine or ten pressures.
11
pressures.
I haven't checked the updated numbers.
Man,
but yeah,
this
11
is not
pressures,
good for my
no sacks.
Not good for my brand.
Anyway, escapes like four clear misses, tosses the ball, touchdown. Texans go ahead. It looked like that might have been enough to steal the game after, who was it, the fumble? Zach Ertz? No, Josh Adams fumbles
Josh
the
Adams
ball
fumbled.
Basically when the Eagles were trying to ice the game away. Put the game in jeopardy, only for Nick Foles to execute his own comeback. But again, yeah. It's that Watson, it's ridiculous. It should not be working, and yet it somehow is.
Watson, he was very good against the Jets last week. He was excellent in this game. And he's starting, I think this is where you have to start giving him credit. I mean, he is doing this with only Nuke Hopkins and a poor offensive line.
I mean, I am giving
him credit. And he's throwing to Limestone College.
Working.
Limestone College receivers? Is that what it is?
Yeah, sounded right. Yeah.
Limerick College? Where do you go?
Limerick. Limestone. I think you're right. Limestone College.
So that's the thing. When you talk about Breeze's MVP candidacy, he's throwing to some guys people have never heard of. Mahomes, while Tyreek Hill is beautiful, Mahomes is throwing. He's just throwing guys like DeMarcus Robinson. Oh, he's just throwing dudes open.
Yeah.
Watson's starting to do that now, too. And when you start producing, regardless of who's out on the field, that's some special stuff. That's what Watson's been doing these last few weeks.
By the way, the guy from Limestone College, his name is Vincent Smith.
Right.
Vincent is, this is the most creative spelling of Vincent I've ever seen in my life. V-Y-N-C-I-N-T.
Hmm.
Vincent.
It's a good Vincent's
name. But yeah, Limestone College. I agree. I'm giving Deshaun Watson all the credit possible. I mean, he is doing ridiculous things. When you look at, obviously, MVP, it's a silly award that I don't like to countenance, but when you start talking about the situation a player is in and how they are succeeding in the face of said situation, everyone likes to look at the sort of backups and the passing talent, you know, whatever. Deshaun Watson is doing this with Nuke Hopkins and a set of traffic cones in front of him.
Yeah.
Like, he is being, there's 4, 5, 6, however many pass rushers coming at him, right? The only thing stopping them from hitting him and killing him is 5 oversized police traffic cones stood in front of him. The ball gets snapped, and he has 1.5 seconds to make something else happen, or he dies. And he's doing that every single play of the game. 70 times in a game, he is being told to get the ball out of his hands or evade pass rushes when all they have to do
he's
is navigate.
He's still bringing some of the pressure on himself.
When all they have to do is to navigate 5 large traffic cones.
And so we talked about Foles' high variance.
Mm-hmm.
So Watson's overall PFF grade isn't in the elite range because he's had 2 of the worst games we've seen from quarterbacks this year. Against Buffalo back in week 6 and against Washington back in week 11. Very much fumble-driven, bad decision-driven. But he's also had elite games against Indianapolis. I'm just looking at blue. Indianapolis, Miami, Tennessee, yesterday against Philadelphia. So his high-end play is as good as any quarterback in the league. That includes Mahomes. That includes Breeze. That includes everybody at the top, which means they're going to have to probably win 4 games now. But you talk about playoff runs. Watson has it in him.
Oh, yeah.
Which brings me to the AFC right now. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, Deshaun Watson in Houston, Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. You've got Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, who's played like a top 3 to 5 quarterback this year as well. Tom Brady in New England. The next 10 years in the AFC look really, really good, especially if you keep Brady in that mix.
They do. I mean, I'm amazed that Deshaun Watson doesn't have more of those stinking games where everything just goes to hell because of the situation.
Because of everything around him, yeah.
Like the Texans have, at the moment, they have the third worst team in terms of offensive line pass blocking efficiency, ahead of only the Dolphins and the Cardinals. The Cardinals, by the way, have a historically bad pass blocking unit.
Oh, they're bad. They are horrendous.
Like, I don't remember seeing a pass blocking efficiency below that point since we've been looking at it. The Texans are just like bad on a general scale. You know, they're bad. Every given year, they'd be bad. But the Cardinals are like off the end of the scale bad ever. Like, that, it's a completely different level. But I'm amazed that that doesn't manifest itself in more games where Deshaun Watson just has a nightmare trying to do it all himself. Like, right. The percentage...
Only two real disastrous games.
The percentage in which he's managed to turn that into something amazing versus something horrendous is remarkable.
Yeah, so I think the future of the AFC at the quarterback position, very, very bright. And so the Texans, they lost. So they are currently in line for the number three seed instead of the number two seed. New England beats Buffalo to now move up to the number two seed. If New England beats the Jets, they will get the number two seed. If Kansas City wins against Oakland, they get the number one seed. Technically, there's still a chance for the Chargers to get the number one seed. If Kansas City, I'm not expecting Kansas City to lose to Oakland, right?
No.
We're not expecting that at all.
We're not.
And if the Jets beat the Patriots, the Texans could beat the Jags and get the number two seed. So that's what we're looking at next week. We'll break it down later in the week. We'll go through all the scenarios with everybody. Where else do we want to go here? Do we want to stick AFC or move to some of the NFC stuff?
Can we, even though we lost, can we call the Sam Darnold thing still a success for the Ginger Theory?
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, they scored 38 points.
Right. He played very well, and they should have won the game.
Should have won the game.
The refs, you know, they did some pretty weird things at the end of that game. Pass interference where none existed.
Bad for those.
A pick
bad
two. A pick two taken off the board.
I know. Bad pass interference plays or calls just really frustrate me. Because
was,
we're
that game in particular had some bizarre ones.
We're in the business. I don't want to get too much into it, but we're in the business of evaluating players, isolating their play, and nothing frustrates me worse than a 50-50 ball, which is really like a 20-80 ball. Like, your guy's got like a 20% chance of actually catching that statistically, turning into a 40-yard gain in essentially rewarding the offense. We've talked about this for a while now, but those are frustrating, especially ticky-tack penalties.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about defenses. I love good quarterback play, but I love good quarterback play when it's earned. Watching Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes last night, the spectacular throws that they made, they were earning their stuff. They're earning their plays. So there's some penalties in there too, but earning a lot of their plays with great throws. I love watching that. I don't love watching a heave get 40 yards. Don't enjoy that.
So a lot of people keep wanting to essentially change pass interference to this college idea where it's only a 15-yard penalty, right? I don't love that idea because I think there are instances where you actually want the spot foul where a guy basically tackles somebody rather than gives up a touchdown because it's a better play.
Yeah.
Like, that deserves more than a 15-yard penalty. That does deserve the spot foul. But there needs to be a system where we're actually looking at what happened. So Joe Hayden got penalized for defensive pass interference against Kamara and the Saints on what looked pretty generous. But that was a swing of bringing up fourth down somewhere at midfield or giving the Saints first down at the one.
Yeah, right.
And that off a call that was clearly not 100%, right? At the very minimum, that was a somewhat debatable call. And that's a swing of punting it away at midfield to first and goal for the one, which ends up in a touchdown. Like, that is a colossal swing based on what we can't determine was 100% nailed on certainty. If you're going to make... Like, the spot foul thing, I think, needs to be egregious. Almost like a technical, you know, like a flagrant foul, rather, in basketball, right?
Yeah.
If you have a flagrant foul, it deserves a spot foul.
See, that would be a good way to define it. Because it's tough to, in my head, as an evaluator, I would rather say, if the quarterback throws a perfect pass and you just, like, tug him to keep him away from it, that I would hate.
Yeah.
Because I want to give the quarterback credit. But you can't, there's too much judgment to that. If you define it as flagrant.
That's the thing, right? But the NFL kind of went away from all those plays, like the 5 and 15-yard penalties. They've tried to do away with any form of, like, thought for the officials. Whereas actually you need that because there's too much nuance in this stuff. So I think, like, a 15-yard penalty for standard defensive pass interference and then a spot foul for the flagrant pass interference would be a good way of doing that. But either way, plays like Jamal Adams on Jimmy Graham where he just dominated him on a fade, like, that shouldn't be a penalty at all. That's neither flagrant nor it's just bad. It's a bad call.
Yeah, they were bailed out of a lot of plays there. Let's discuss. Where were we going? Oh, so we got the Darnold thing in there. We've discussed Jets and Packers. Ginger we discussed theory. It. Let's discuss that Chiefs Seahawks game.
Okay.
The Chiefs 4 losses. I tweeted out last night. Where is it? They've now given up 43, 54, 29, and 38 in their 4 losses.
Given up or scored?
Given up. That's what they've allowed. And they've scored, 40 and 51 and 28 and 31.
Right. That's the most.
Top of my head.
That's the most important thing to me is that this felt like the Chiefs offense was suffocated and they put up 31 points.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the story all the way through their season. The losses they've scored. I don't know. What is that on average? 35, 40 points on average when they lose?
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. So how concerned are you? First off, I just can't wait for the playoffs. If you think about the playoff moments that Mahomes and Watson and some of these quarterbacks are going to have, Russell Wilson playing an underdog role, maybe having to go through Dallas and that really good defense. I mean, there's so many good stories that are going to occur in the playoffs. How concerned are you by the Chiefs' defense, even though they're ready to have the number one seed? They've been in multiple games right now where they've had to make key stops and they haven't even come close. When they faced good offenses in shootout situations, it's a toss up.
Yeah.
They're a number one seed where when you get them into their game, which is a shootout situation, they're no lock to win.
No, they're not. But I think they're still a favorite to win because their offense is better than pretty much anybody else's. And we talked about this all season long. You just need the defense to come up big once, right? Basically in the game.
Yeah.
I think they're still in a good situation because they are likely to be in the number one seed, which is going to put them in some pretty favorable situations. I think the same thing is true for the Chargers or the Chiefs as it is for the Chargers. The worst team they could face in the postseason would be the Ravens. I think the Ravens give the Chiefs problems. The Ravens give the Chargers problems. The Ravens probably give everybody in the AFC problems.
Yeah, but why wouldn't it be? See, I think it's anybody with a good quarterback, though. So I think, Brady put up 40 against them with the Patriots because a good quarterback, they have not slowed down a good quarterback in passing attack yet. Brady's put up 40 against them. If they had faced Andrew Luck, they're putting up 30 plus against Kansas City. Philip Rivers again. See what happens, but Rivers has generally had a couple pretty good games against them. I mean, Watson, if they had to go up against Watson and the Texans passing offense.
I'm not concerned by their ability to win a shootout. I am very concerned by their ability to win a game where they run up against a defense that can actually limit the offense and will grind the clock out the way the Ravens did. If they turn that game into what we saw between the Ravens and the Chargers, that is completely uncharted territory for this Chiefs offense. If they go into yet another shootout, it's nothing new. This Chiefs been doing that all season long. They're comfortable.
Yeah, but there's a difference between comfortable and playing your odds.
I mean, they're 11-4, so their odds have been reasonably good at winning those games.
Yeah. How many? But against some pretty good playoff teams, they have not won.
Being at home for them is going to be big. Arrowhead is
significant. That's definitely a big
advantage for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a little concerned. So supposedly Andy Reid was saying he was getting a look at some of the younger guys on the defensive side of the ball. So maybe that is a factor. Yesterday did sum up this whole pass rush versus coverage thing. Because they were getting pressure on Russell Wilson. Sometimes, again, Russell Wilson has these games where he's just in the zone, and he's like, all right, I know the rush is going to get to me. I'm just going to wait for it and then navigate it.
Yeah.
That's what quarterbacks are really doing that these days at a high level. You're not supposed to look at the rush. You're not supposed to pull your eyes down. But there are certain plays where Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, they're almost just like, you know what? I don't want to make this play within the pocket. I'm going to see the rush. I'm going to navigate it perfectly and then create my own passing lane. That's what makes these guys so difficult to slow down. But you've got Tre'Varius Ward in the secondary yesterday getting torched. Steven Nelson was in great coverage on a couple plays, but the throw was just spectacular.
Tremont
Smith, like who was playing in the secondary for the Chiefs?
Yeah, throw and catch was pretty spectacular a couple of times.
Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, they made a couple of plays that you really shouldn't be able to make. I think there's something to this idea that he was taking a look at a bunch of guys that, you know, young people and see what they had, because there are a bunch of names on that team with very little experience that had extensive playing time in that game. The other thing is Chris Jones extended that streak of sacks and crazy impact plays.
Yeah.
He may be entering that conversation of the Fletcher Cox, the next best guy.
The guy behind Donald. Yeah. He had four missed tackles too, which is hilarious, but two sacks, a QB hit, and five hurries on 32 rushes.
He has been pretty absurd. And his sort of run of ridiculously good grades and actually crushing people in terms of overall in terms of overall pass rush and grade has been pretty ridiculous right now.
Yeah. Mike Renner did a video breakdown on Chris Jones. If you guys are watching on the YouTube channel, you guys can check that out. Again, if you're not watching, go check it out. Mike did a great job. It was Mike's victory lap for calling him a top 3 to 5 player.
He really did. I mean, you know, we each have...
Our grading backed it up, though, too.
He graded really well.
We weren't strong enough saying he was 3 to 5, but our grading said this dude's a top 10 player, top 15 player. For sure.
So right now, he's moved himself on the season to a 91 overall grade, which is slightly below. Fletcher Cox is 91.8, so he's kind of in that ballpark at this point.
And Donald's, what, 95?
Donald, 95.2.
Yeah. Pretty good. Okay, so you're not concerned about the Chiefs. The Seahawks lock up a playoff spot. You know, they continue to try to run the ball and grind it out. Chris Carson's been their best running back. He's doing a great job running after contact. I mean, one of those, that touchdown, the first touchdown, I think it was. I mean, again, everybody likes to give credit to the offensive line. And certain runs, you give the credit to the offensive line. Certain runs, you don't. Chris Carson's he made something. He did a really good job making something out of nothing. 103 out of his 116 yards. 103 out of 116 came after contact yesterday.
Yeah, 7 broken tackles. That's pretty hard to do.
He's
been a really good running back for them. He doesn't get the credit that other certain running backs get, who shall remain nameless.
We're not doing it here today.
Because he doesn't get, you know, league-leading rushing yardage totals, etc. But he has been extremely good at adding value on top of whatever's there.
Yeah. You know,
we talk about running backs that get what's there and nothing else. Thomas Jones, for example. But he gets a lot in addition to what's there.
Carson's kind of playing at that Marshawn Lynch type of, I mean, a 27 carry for 116 yard game where you're grinding 103 after contact, a couple touchdowns. That's a Marshawn Lynch type of game. It's also like a keep your team on schedule type of game.
I mean, he's averaging 3.5 yards after contact and he's only averaging 4.5 yards total. Yeah. Like, you know, Christian McCaffrey, for example, is averaging almost 3 yards after contact, but he's averaging 5 yards total. Like, there's 2 yards difference between the after contact and before. Carson, it's half that.
It's pretty good. So, you know, people don't like you don't want to play this team, but Seattle's built to do some things. I think they might have some trouble against the Dallas defense. That's going to be a good matchup, assuming that's the matchup, defense and Seattle.
I don't know if it's always like this, but this year feels more than most that home field is going to be a really big issue for the playoffs. And in fact, if anything, in recent years, there's a lot of road teams that have done damage. But this year feels like home field advantage is going to be a major component of this playoffs.
Well, nothing's like Seattle has always been a different team home and road. They've had some big road wins. I don't want to diminish that, but they've always been a team like that. Dallas this year is at an extreme level of home and road. So if they do win their first game and then go on the road, I mean, that you might see two different... Dallas could win a game and then look like a disaster, like at New Orleans or whatever the following week. Let's get into New Orleans. 31-28 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. What did you make... A lot of people discussing Mike Tomlin's coaching decisions. Fake punt in the fourth quarter with the lead.
Yeah.
I more question the Steelers celebrating being a yard short on 4th and 5. I don't know if they know the rules of football, but that was...
Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and assume that somehow he lost his bearings and where exactly he was and give him credit for the idea that...
Or maybe if you sell it, the ref's just like, well, he's
so
first down.
This comes down to this idea of execution versus idea, right? I've seen people saying that this was an inexcusable call, disgraceful, terrible, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that going for it on 4th and 5 was terrible. Going for it with a fullback dive up the middle was a terrible call. Like, okay, 4th and 5, it's not exactly a high percentage play, however you're going for it. But how many times is the guy going to go right up the middle for 6 yards and a fake punt?
Yeah.
Probably not that often. So he made like half a yard before he got hit and then had to make the next 4 on his own to come up half a yard short.
But fake punts are so much about the look. If you get the right look, you go with it.
Right.
If you don't, you punt. I mean, it always, almost always has to be a judgment call, right? If we have numbers advantage based off what our fake punt is, if we have the advantage, we're going to do it.
Right.
It can't just be like, we're running the fake, that's it.
But
if it's not there, you got to get out of it.
It can't be that many scenarios whereby 6 yards right up the middle is on.
No, that's generally not a good. It's generally not a good play. Like, you need to really know that something's up.
Yeah, I can see a bunch of those scenarios where it's the up back around the edge, or you're getting a guy into space. Right, I can see a plenty of scenarios where that works. Running right up the middle. I mean, you had to have seen something pretty spectacular on tape to justify that. At which point, that should be the first thing you say when the question comes up. Not just, I made a call, it
right.
didn't work, I take full responsibility. It's no. Look, we saw.
Why did you do it?
We saw this crazy look on tape. We saw it again there. Something happened. It didn't work out.
The Saints, not surprisingly, the Saints offense got back on track in the dome.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the Saints offense? Well, they played a bunch of road games.
Another team that at home is huge.
So they officially locked up the number one seed. The Super Bowl has to go through New Orleans. They're going to have to win. It might be a Dallas or Seattle coming through there.
Yeah.
Week one, which, again, to their advantage, even though they lost to Dallas, I think that's a different game the second time around. If they do have to play the Rams or the Bears, it's in the dome. So it's to their advantage. That's huge. But, again, I think they find ways. Even the offensive line wasn't great. The pass rush from Pittsburgh was compressing in on Drew Brees more than you're used to seeing. He was still making some big throws. The defense stepped up when they needed to. They are a tough team because they can win so many different ways. Alvin Kamara is just, still a stud.
Yeah.
So they're dangerous.
They are. I would be concerned by Teron Armstead going down hurt in that game, re-aggravating an injury he's had kind of caused him problems all the way through the season. He won't play next week, obviously, because they wrapped up. Why would they put him out there? Hopefully,
Brees
we'll be back
next week.
We'll be back for the playoffs. He's got himself some time now, but that's a pretty significant risk or injury for them.
Like, it is.
He's arguably the best left tackle in the game right now. And more to the point, the drop off between him and having to kick Andres Pete out to left tackle to replace him, plus whatever knock on effect that has to left guard. Like, that is concerning. That's a major, major blow for a team. Outside of taking out Michael Thomas or, Drew Brees himself, that is probably as big a blow as you could deal to that offense.
Especially depending on the matchups. If they do have to play Chicago, especially. If they play the Rams, they can get away.
I mean, the Rams are maybe the only team that can't exploit that with a formidable pass rusher.
But there is the knock-on off effect of taking
guard.
Your guard and kicking him out.
But the Cowboys can exploit that with edge rushers. The Bears can exploit that with edge rushers. Like, that's a major problem for most teams.
Ryan Ramczyk missed a couple snaps, too, banged up, but he came back in. Didn't have his finest game. He gave up 5 hurries. So, the Saints continue to find different ways to win. The Steelers, man, what a crazy season for them. So many close losses. They finally get over the hump, beating New England with a great game plan that we broke down last week, and they might not even be making the playoffs right now. Big Ben had a weird game, too. He missed a ton of throws and then made a ton of throws. I mean, he would just clutch Ben. Some of those plays, too. How about double-teaming Antonio Brown, and they just got this field. Romo, we give Romo some crap and all that stuff, but he did a great job of breaking it down. Hey, they're bracketing him, and he just ran straight, and it's just this great feel that Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown have. Some really nice plays, just Antonio Brown and Big Ben yesterday.
Yeah, and they had this incredible game plan against New England, and albeit a game plan that kind of felt like just throw everything at them, You know, it's
it was a little bit of that, but there was so much like specific doubling
and
game plan oriented stuff.
It was clever and it was nuanced, but it did feel a lot like just empty the playbook. Throw everything you've got at them one after the other, and just as long as you change it from one snap to the next, we're good. But this week, they just went back to the game plan that had been exposed by teams with the same kind of skill sets and capabilities as the Saints have, which is, you know, you've got this elite, high-level wide receiver that plays a lot in the slot. Oh, well. Okay.
Yeah, let's just see how that works out. Vince Williams cover him.
Right, let's just see how that works out. Here's the defense we're going to be playing against it. Like, we saw what happens when that when you do that against the Chargers, and Keenan Allen just relentlessly over and over targeted because you kept putting a linebacker and a safety on him. The same thing happened with Michael Thomas, and the same thing happened. Like, you can't, you have to have, if you're going to have a whole bespoke game plan for the Patriots, you need to at least take that away from those teams because that's their single biggest thing. And Michael Thomas had 12 targets, caught 11 passes for 109 yards and a touchdown. Like, you need a better game plan than that.
Michael Thomas caught one pass against Vince Williams in coverage, three against Sean Davis, who's a safety.
And shouldn't be covering
one against
any
Mike
kind
Hilton.
Of wide receiver, ever.
No. One against Mike Hilton, one against Terrell Edmonds, so, and five against Joe Hayden. So he's spread it all around. Vince Williams, again, Romo did a really nice job isolating. Hey, they know Kamara and his leverage against the safety or linebacker that's trying to cover him. So Kamara had a 31-yard reception against Vince Williams and a 42-yard reception against Sean Davis. So they knew how to exploit those matchups. They did it, you know, extremely well, that Saints offense.
And this is kind of coming back to what we've said for a while, or at least I've said for a while, which is this defense, I think, continually overachieves against bad teams or bad offenses, but gets exposed against good ones. Because ultimately the lack of talent on this defense comes to the fore when they play good teams. And, you know, Sean Davis in particular is asked to cover people.
Yeah.
And generally when he does that, bad things happen. Like, you know, the catch to Kamara out of the backfield, the swing. Like Romo was saying, that he was sort of trying to hide from Breeze and surprise him essentially by popping up.
Right.
The same way, who was the, Eddie Jackson did a couple of weeks ago with the Bears, where he basically came from a mile away and undercut the Matthew Stafford out route, picked it off, right? I don't even think he was doing that. I think he just took such a terrible angle to the play that he just looked awful. Like, Sean Davis is a bad player in coverage, and it gets exposed way too often. Vince Williams, as much as I love the guy for practicing in pads and shorts,
good blitzer,
is a good blitzer and can be okay against the run, but is very, very overmatched in coverage. And, you know, Terrell Edmonds is young and a rookie, but doesn't exactly look great chasing in coverage. There's too many players there that cannot deal with high-level matchup problems. And as long as that is the case, every time they come up against a good offense, they're going to have some issues.
Yep, and that's why right now, outside looking in when it comes to the playoff picture.
Outside looking in.
So they're rooting for Baker Mayfield.
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all?
Browns are officially eliminated, though, now, right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Damn it.
Let's go. We've hit the big stories. Let's go rapid fire around the league. Super rapid fire. But Baker had an outstanding game. That's why I talked about the AFC quarterbacks. This is going to be fun.
He stared down Hugh Jackson again.
Of course he did. Baker going up against the Ravens defense next week is going to be a lot of fun. The Bengals defense was a disaster yesterday, so Baker had a really big game.
Nick Chubb was awesome again as well.
He was. The Colts and Titans are going to be playing Sunday Night Football. We'll have a preview for that game, or we'll talk about it obviously on the podcast later. But it's a play-in game for the wild card spot in the AFC. Andrew Luck makes another spectacular fourth quarter comeback.
Against the Giants. I'm just, you know, throwing
that
out there.
That's
it. It was the Giants.
That's going to be a good one, though.
Yeah.
Colts and the Titans. Titans defense, again, doing a pretty good job this season. They shut down Josh Johnson Saturday afternoon down the stretch when they needed to. The Titans scheme it up a little bit. This is going to be a fun one. It'll be, you know, probably a cool night in Nashville, scheming up against Andrew Luck. It should be a nice little matchup. It's a play-in game. Tighten up, Sam.
Yeah. You know who's started to play really well for the Titans?
Who's that?
Rashawn Evans.
Yeah.
He began
last seven or eight weeks.
First round rookie. He began the season terribly. Looked awful. But from like week seven onwards, nothing but good grades. And we're starting to see the guy that we saw at Alabama, which is as much as there were other linebackers that I thought were better players, Leighton Van Der Esch, you know, Roquan Smith, that kind of thing, nobody hit people like Rashawn Evans did. And I don't even mean like ball carriers. I mean like he would attack a blocker, a guard at the line of scrimmage, and just slam into those guys like a brick wall.
And he started his career as an undersized edge rusher.
Right. So he's starting to look like that guy again. Maybe it just took him a while to like mentally get up to speed and, you know, reach that point where he's not thinking again, like we talked about before, and just be playing on instinct. But now he is. He's actually a difference maker on that team.
Yeah, he is. And we've got Kevin Byard now has 12 interceptions over the last 2 years. He's become one of the best playmakers in the NFL at the safety position. He had the game-sealing pick. Well, before the pick six.
Right.
I mean, he really ended the game, but then there was the Malcolm Butler pick six to really seal the game. So, Colts win. The Titans win. Dallas clinches the NFC East with the win over the Tampa Bay Bucks. Anything in that one? I mean, that was kind of expected. Dak, we expected him to bounce back. This was Dak's highest graded game in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So despite having 400 yards against Philadelphia, he just avoided some of the disastrous mistakes he'd had in recent weeks.
The best thing to come out of this game was Antoine Woods eating a W in front of Jameis Winston. That was pretty spectacular.
I'm just kind of surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Right. I just think that was a pretty spectacular troll job. By the way, Byron Jones got his ass kicked in this game. Mike Evans apparently is capable of still destroying very good corners every now and again. Byron Jones gave up 8 catches for 150 yards on 12 targets. That, I think, is by far the most yardage Byron Jones has given up this season. A guy who was playing pretty spectacularly as a number one corner.
As well as we've said he's played well, as much as we've said he's played well, Michael Thomas, good corners have given him issues.
Yeah, so
I mean, good receivers.
That is, in fact, more than double the highest total of yardage Byron Jones has given up this season. The highest total before that was 74 yards against the Houston Texans and Nuke Hopkins.
Yeah, and Michael Thomas didn't catch passes because, you know, he just kept grabbing them.
Right.
So Byron,
that was pretty good. So he's more than doubled the amount of yardage he's given up in a single game in that game.
My favorite thing about the Cowboys every week is to just check Leighton Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith side by side. They combined for 20 tackles, 9 defensive stops, 8 of which were Van Der Esch's, but then
8 stops in a game is absurd.
Jalen Smith had his fumble 6, you know, fumble recovery for a touchdown and all that fun stuff. I mean, they are just an outstanding young linebacker duo. Van Der Esch is starting to put up Kuechly-like numbers when it comes to stops and things like that.
8 stops is 2 more than anybody else in the league this week.
Yeah, that's really good.
It's By the way, just to really trigger Colts fans, it's twice what Darius Leonard put up.
Ooh, yeah. Van Der Esch has been a little better, even though he doesn't have the forced fumbles.
Uh-oh.
Ooh. Go check out PFF Elite. Get the full breakdown. Vikings beat the Lions. Kirk Cousins with an elite Hail Mary.
Yeah, so this game looked for all the world like the Lions were going to win like a 12-3 ugly, horrible-looking game. And then the Vikings executed a Hail Mary at the end of the half and completely changed the game.
Changed everything. We had this game on in the office, and I felt like every time I looked up, Matthew Stafford was throwing an incompletion.
Yeah, I mean, he was.
That's my analysis on it.
Truly spectacular. So Kyle Rudolph had a good game and was the guy who caught the Hail Mary. What was perhaps most impressive about it was how spectacularly, terribly it was defended by the Lions. Rudolph was the only guy that jumped for the ball.
Yeah.
Like, somebody boxed out Adam Thielen at the back of the end zone and made sure he wasn't involved in the play. Fair play to that guy, whoever it was. One player on the Lions defense that actually defended it well. There was Deshaun Shedd or somebody was just, like, looking at Kyle Rudolph the whole way. He's like, no, we're good. I got you. Oh, you caught the ball. Huh, yeah. Maybe I should have jumped for that at the same time. But there's like a whole collection of Lions in the end zone. Not one of them jumped to contest it with Kyle Rudolph. He was a 6'6" guy. He's in a reasonable position to catch a jump off. You're not going to contest it.
I don't know how teams are so bad at defending the Hail Mary. Matthew Stafford had under 4 yards per attempt, 3.6. He's now had 2 out of his last 3 weeks, he's been under 5 yards per attempt, 6.7 yards per attempt on the season. That's the lowest number since his rookie season.
Random other player that's starting to play well out of nowhere. Mackenzie Alexander all of a sudden is quite good.
Look, the Minnesota defense is still one of the most difficult to throw against.
Yeah.
Third and longs and all that stuff. And I know they got torched in the NFC Championship by the great Nick Foles last year. Don't let that memory stick with you.
Okay.
They're dangerous defensively, too.
Yeah.
They're going to at least make things difficult. Man, Xavier Rhodes is struggling. But yeah. They make things difficult.
He's also like ripping a hamstring every time he goes on the field, which isn't helpful.
He's either, what'd you say, getting torched or getting hurt?
Yeah.
And he had one play
that's
yesterday
his entire
where
he's season.
Both.
Yeah, that's his entire season is basically getting.
So what is it, Vikings win and they're in next week?
Yeah.
If they lose and Philadelphia wins?
Then they're out.
Then they're out. Okay. Blake Bortles comes in, saves the day for the Jags. They win 17-7 over the Dolphins. Tannehill's fraudulent season continues to fall off the rails with as one of the worst pick sixes we've seen.
Wow. Are we in that scenario now that we talked about where the Bears control the opponent in the playoffs by
I didn't look. Let's look into it. We'll look forward for the preview.
Okay.
New England, again, takes control of the number two seed. They win 24-12. Their passing offense was horrendous. The Bills' passing defense continues to be very, very good. And Josh Allen was kind of all over the place, the full Josh Allen experience, floating touch passes right to corners and stuff.
I mean, that was just amazing. It was like, obviously the knock on Josh Allen is he's one of these players that likes to fire bullet passes in with this incredible arm strength, doesn't have the greatest feel in the world for, you know, for putting a touch pass where it needs to go. And there was one play in the game where he dropped back, and you could see the entire way, it's like, right, I want to hit this guy. There's a bit of a window I need. I'm just gonna dial it back. I'm just going to hit this beautiful little touch pass. It's going to be amazing. I've seen Tom Brady do this hundreds of times. And then it's just this delicate little loft right to a defender.
Wasn't great.
It was the most amazingly stereotypical Josh Allen pass in the world. It's like, oh, let me give this touch pass thing a swing. I've seen other people do that. And then, no, it didn't go well.
Patriots just winning in different ways. They're used to being carried by the pass game. They ran the ball 45 times for over 270 yards on the ground. Of course, the defense, like we said, they made life difficult for Allen in the passing attack. There was a garbage time touchdown in there, but Jason McCourty with some big plays, J.C. Jackson, Patrick Chung, Shaq Mason with a big game up front at guard. So New England now controls their own destiny playing the Jets next week. And the Ginger Theory.
The Ginger Theory.
Facing Sam Darnold.
At least
you've seen
that the Ginger Theory can the theory is undefeated, but the player can be defeated.
Yeah, so which is fine. I mean, Carson Palmer and Wentz, those
so
guys were
at least the Patriots know that he can be beaten.
Right,
they're running up against a Ginger Theory that's unstoppable.
But their offense needs to show up
because
the Jets might score 30 again
next
week with the Ginger Theory. Only thing we haven't touched on: Rams beat the Cardinals handily. They bounce back offensively for whatever that's worth in the dome against Arizona. I thought it'd be a little tighter than this, a little bit closer.
Larry Fitzgerald threw a touchdown pass.
Yeah, it's great.
It was a nice pass as well. Some of the best passes this week were thrown by wide receivers.
Some good ones.
I mean, Larry's was okay, right? But Jarvis Landry's pass was legitimately one of the best passes of the weekend. Like,
yeah.
It was a 50-yard bomb down the sideline into pretty tight coverage.
It was. And then the Bears beat the Niners 14-9. Is that right? Is that the score? I just read it. Yeah, 14-9.
Nick Mullins almost got it done, and then did one of the most inexplicable things I've ever seen.
What was it, fourth and four?
Fourth and four, he escapes some pressure, starts running out to right field, and instead of picking up 4 yards to move the chains and get a first down, decided to miss the field by 7 yards deep down the sideline.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, okay, there was a guy chasing him, but he wasn't going to stop him for 4 yards. Like, this was like the Brett Favre 2009 NFC Championship game thing, where it's like, just run it. Just pick it up. Pick it up.
Just go get the first
down. But at least Brett Favre had the living crap beaten out of him in that game and couldn't really run and was like hobbling his way into right field. Like, Mullins was just elected, instead of taking the first down, to fire a complete no-hoper pass.
Just throw it out of bounds.
Downfield, out of bounds. Like, that was... I've been quite the Nick Mullins supporter over his tenure.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
That was bad.
Veteran Mike McGlinchey...
Yes.
While he's seen a lot in his day,
hasn't seen Khalil
as
Mack.
A 40-year-old, hasn't seen Khalil Mack somehow in his 15-year illustrious career. He has the worst game of his career by far: a sack, 4 QB hits, and 2 hurries. That those numbers don't even necessarily sum up how bad it was. So
you know, we should look
Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks did their usual dominant performance up front.
Yeah, you know what we should look into at some point, like the number of opponents
that have recorded like a grade in the 30s when facing X.
Yeah.
So I would imagine Donald and Mac, the number of times Aaron Donald has produced a 30 grade from the opposing guard must be absolutely off the charts.
Again, we can have a full podcast on this separately, but people say, why don't you adjust for competition? There's many, many reasons, but one of them is, now here's the context. Mike McGlinchey has had a great season. However, when he went up against Khalil Mack, here's what happened. And then we used to always say, sometimes Robert Quinn, right, used to beat up on all the bad tackles and then struggle against the good tackles. There's value in beating up on the bad players, right, too. So there's a couple different ways to look at it. Mitch Trubisky, outside of that one disastrous negated interception, was really, really good. Made a bunch of key throws down the stretch to seal the deal. I know they only scored 14 points. But again, throwing the football the last 2 weeks, he's looking pretty good.
Other than the terrible, terrible decision.
That was a bad decision.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm just saying, like, purely like throwing the football, ball location, and all that stuff has been much better the last couple weeks, I think, for Trubisky. Here's what I'll say about that, too. If you cut out some of the bad decisions and he starts playing like that these last couple weeks, I know it was against the Packers and against the Niners, but if he can make he's going to have to just make a couple key throws in the playoffs, and that makes them a little bit more dangerous.
Right.
You can't just scheme him up in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Do we hit on everything? It's Christmas Eve.
Oh,
we're wrapping it up.
You neglected entirely.
I did not.
The Miami game.
No, I didn't. Jacksonville-Miami,
Jacksonville-Miami. You didn't say anything about that.
I said Bortles came in, saved the day from Kessler, and Tannehill threw one of the worst pick sixes you'll see. That's it.
That's your lot? Did we touch
They don't deserve any more.
Did we do Atlanta-Carolina?
No, I don't even see it. Where is that even hiding? Look, it's not even on my sheet.
Well, that's not my
fault. There it is. It's top left.
Right, yeah. There you go.
Heinicke was bad.
Heinicke was bad. What's his name? Allen came on the field for a brief period. He must have been so excited. Kyle Allen, 9 snaps. He must have been loving life.
Grady Jarrett, another great performance. Deion Jones keeps making plays in coverage.
Deion Jones, now that he's finally back, has actually proven everything I said about him.
It's great.
Just a month too late.
Tack McKinley with a sack, 3 hits, and 4 hurries. Is that a career high in pressures? Looks like it.
Quite possibly.
8 pressures, career high. Well, the season high, at least. I didn't check last year. So
yeah, the whole Falcons defense played pretty much very well, which kind of tells you all you need to know about the Carolina offense, which didn't, other than Taylor Moten.
Panthers are out of the...
And Christian McCaffrey, who remains awesome.
Out of the playoff picture. Is that it? It's Christmas.
McCaffrey missed some snaps.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay.
That'll do it. Merry Christmas Eve and Merry Christmas to you guys. If you're listening after Christmas, we hope it was great for you. Happy holidays, too, if you prefer that.
Okay.
But you can have a Merry Christmas whether you're celebrating it or not. That's my theory.
Hmm.
Right? You have a great Christmas, Sam.
Thank you. You too, Steve.
Thanks. I'm going to fly home.
Yeah.
And see the fam real quick, and then I'll be back here Wednesday morning. We'll be back Thursday with our Week 17 preview. Be sure to check out PFF Elite for all the breakdowns. Give it as a gift. Do we have any special gift offers?
We do. You can buy the gift of PFF somewhere in... You go to profootballfocus.com.
You'll find how you can gift it. And then the YouTube channel will be there all week breaking down all this stuff. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you guys have a great holiday, and we'll chat again Thursday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $35 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.